Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com.
Welcome to Radical Transformational Leadership with Dr. Monica Sciama, heard every other Tuesday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and every Saturday, 6 a.m. Eastern. This is a Dream Vision 7 Radio Network production on the Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age platform. To learn more, go to DreamVision7Radio.com. The survival and future of humanity and civilization depends on the framework Monica Sciama outlines in Radical Transformational Leadership. It is my sincere hope that anyone who wants to participate in healing our wounded planet will read this book and follow its principles. Anyone who doubts that the changes needed to lift our world beyond the chaos of today's deep problems and political chest thumping need look no further than this book. The new field she describes as radical systems and cultural transformation constitutes a kind of invisible renaissance emerging around the world of understanding the entwined inner and outer nature of genuine systemic change. I invite you into this most powerful show with Dr. Monica Sciama.
Deborah, thank you so much for hosting all of us at your Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. We have expressed things that matter to you and me and to the people that you host, creating a world that's better for all of us. Today, I'm going to introduce a very current and important topic for all of us. How do we fundraise differently so that when we act and strategize, we are doing so from a different space? The topic is radical transformational fundraising. And I will introduce to you Therese Adams. Therese Adams has worked a lot in this domain. And before I say more, I'd like to situate the entire process. So our work, yours, mine, all listeners, Therese's, is about changing the patterns that give rise to problems. So it's very much looking at our systems mind, our pattern mind, the cultural norms, the systems that are not making it work. And to me, it's going to be a space of exploration, not telling people what to do, but really exploring a whole different pattern of leveraging. And to me, the domain of charity, the domain of philanthropy, the domain of giving itself is a huge leverage point to establish the changes that we would like. So there are people from different walks of life. They are citizens, experts, social service providers, politicians, people from government, academia, business, nonprofits, the media, and basically all of them can leverage change from whatever activities they engage in, whatever job they have, because every job is full of opportunities to make that change. Today, we will look at how fundraising can make that change for a particular topic, homelessness, and how we can address it. So these principles are not based on one topic. They apply to every topic that we may have that enhances life, that has built into it a thriving and vitality for all people and the planet. So fundraising for us is such a leverage point, because we give worldwide, we give in different forms, and we will see how when giving is based on universal values, and how giving is based on shifting the patterns that don't work for people, we will see how giving makes such a big difference. So I will now introduce you to Therese Adams. For 20 years, over 20 years really, Therese Adams has held nonprofit leadership positions as an executive director, development director, and community organizer, working primarily in Santa Cruz and also in California's Bay Area. So to us, to Therese, I guess to you, to me, the fact that she's able to bring in her practical experience, but through a particular kind of practice, is vital. So this is not about the theory of change. This is about the theory and practice of change. Since 2014, Therese has practiced as a transformational leadership support coach along with me. And she currently supports the work as a practitioner coach in many places in the U.S. and in Canada. She uses radical transformational leadership in her current position as executive director of the National Alliance of Mental Illness in Santa Cruz County, and her previous work on homelessness and her work in transforming fundraising. This is what most of us want to engage with, right? Transforming fundraising, being able to support important areas, and learn from persons like Therese. So thank you, Therese.
Thank you, Monica, for inviting me.
So Therese, for all of us, what are your most significant contributions as a radical transformer, as a radical transformational leader, as a strategic change agent? What would they be, Therese?
Well, I have incorporated radical transformational leadership, which I will call RTL for short, in all my work in the last 6 years. I have learned to source my own inner values, which are generosity and equity, for myself and everyone. And when I source generosity and equity, I create a new lens so I can simultaneously see the root causes of the problems as I work for change. I can also determine what systems and norms are not working from a place of values. And through RTL, I've worked to end homelessness, I've advocated for a better healthcare treatment for those with mental illness, and I've worked on a project to transform media and the arts. And then what we're going to talk about today is transforming fundraising.
Thank you so much, Therese. I know that you've actually done more than just advocate. There have been results. Well, what would be very interesting for all of us to have some specific examples of your work on fundraising.
Yes, so I have been working on a new way to fundraise to inspire generosity and equity. Before my work with RTL, fundraising had been a challenge over the years. Even though I had years of fundraising training, it was often something I dreaded. I was up against the community narrative that there was not enough money to go around, and organizations I found were in competition for limited funds. Even though I live in one of the most affluent areas in the country, and so I found there was donor and community apathy, that the problems were unsolvable. So many of these difficulties changed when I started fundraising using RTL, sourcing my own values of generosity and equity, and applying the conscious full spectrum response framework to to identify values, looking at the systems and norms that aren't working to solve problems. And through RTL, I came in contact with the concept of conscious reciprocity, which can be summed up as my well-being is tied up with your well-being. And there's a famous quote by Dr. Martin Luther King that illustrates this concept. And that quote is, whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. So in fundraising, there's often a charity mindset, which means that donors give to the poor out of charity or perhaps pity, or a philanthropy mindset, giving because they want their name on a building or in a published report. And I began working to shift charity and philanthropy mindset to one of conscious reciprocity. So Monica, do you want to explain more about that?
I think what you said is so vital, and it's so relevant to our work. I think what you hinted, and I know you will go into more detail, is that in order to shift the mindset that gives rise to charity and philanthropy, and needless to say, people give because they care, so we are not even questioning that, but that mindset, I give because they don't have, is different from a mindset that says, I know that they may not have something for their basic needs, money for their basic needs. And I know that deep down, every human being, including the people I'm supporting, that they have an inner wisdom and a capacity. That space where we are truly standing in our values and greatness, that doesn't have any us and them, rich or poor, from any gender, man, woman, from any other gender, it doesn't matter. But 3 PhDs or haven't finished school, doesn't matter. What matters in that space is knowing my essence. So the conscious reciprocity that you have worked with, Therese, is grounded in a deep knowing and being that every human being's dignity matters to me and others, and that there is a fairness that we all know about. And you use these to open the hearts of generosity, which is a profound space. So generosity gives without expectation. Thank you, Therese. Well, Therese, I am sure that all these spaces that you have worked in, they have their own challenges. And while you were working to shift these mindsets, what would you like to share with us today?
Well, it's been very exciting work. I now design transformational volunteer and donor events differently. The events now inspire donors and clients. I no longer hold galas that have token clients and fundraisers that only raise money as a goal. I now design for a much bigger outcome, to transform the behavior of the participants beyond the events to inspire conscious reciprocity and foster the participants' leadership. For each event, I create activities that source both the donors, staff, and clients' inner potential to shift charity and philanthropy mindsets. I found that when universal core values are communicated, people can resonate with each other regardless of class, race, gender, age, or opinions. Donors access their core values, and they see themselves in those experiencing homelessness and those with mental health conditions.
Thank you so much, Therese. This is exactly what I want you to share, and the depth of that. Because behind this are the three principles that are foundational to radical transformational leadership. So radical means root of. The root of my being And that doesn't have degrees or money or race or religion or any such space attached to it. So the fact that you could use that inner capacity that exists in everyone, not just in the donor, not just in the person who receives the support, but in everybody. And you've done something that I think is a generic principle I heard. You moved from token representation, which is often the case when we have policies, a token representation, to a authentic representation and a leveling of the playing field so that we are not creating the cycle of indebtedness in many different ways. Thank you, Therese.
Yes,
what else would you do differently?
So now I create activities for the participants to identify the main problems those who are experiencing homelessness and mental health illness face, and activities to identify the root causes of the problems and the systems and norms that aren't working. This allows everyone to see the problems of homelessness and mental health differently. And this is different than most fundraising or donor events. So I encourage donors and clients and staff to start using the CFSR framework. So we are no longer just asking for money.
Thank you. Yes, this is about mutually expanding, being spacious. It's not just about money. It's what we change through that money in ourselves and in others. So, you know, you brought up a very important point again, and that it is not that simply because I wish it will happen, but that I need to learn architectural tools that will help me to design differently. Because ultimately a system delivers what it's designed for. A culture also puts in place what it's designed to do, the rules of the game we put in place. So unless we know how to shift what is not so visible and we learn the architecture, we will not be able to move ahead. We will have a superficial, well-intended response. But we are talking about a well-intended approach to having the theory and practice of fundraising shift in a very different way. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And what else do you do when you transform fundraising?
Well, my everyday activities are also done differently. I use the CFSR framework in emails, speeches, meetings, and newsletters when I articulate values and the shifts needed to solve the problems in almost all I do. I invite others also to participate in using a value-based lens to see what is not working and invite them to participate in changing it.
So, yeah, the question that you raised, it's not about transformation like a huge process. It's transformation every day. The way you write emails, you draft the speeches, hold meetings, are all opportunities to fundraise differently, not as a space of expression that is limited and it's what I think and those who receive should do it my way. It is truly a co-creative space, a very generous co-creative space. And to me, it's this ability that you brought in, Therese, on transforming routine activities in that larger vision is so important. Because for many of us who are serving like you have served the homeless, serving people who have mental illness, then our days are not always ego-free, friction-free days. So how do I learn to transform these everyday spaces? How I speak, how I relate, how I write my emails, how I run my meetings, all of us run meetings. Truly, these are transformational spaces. So thank you very much for that. I think... Sorry, Therese.
I said you're welcome.
All right. That's fine. So, Therese, I think that we'll take a small break. And what we will do is we will let's respond to the depth of the work that you've done after our break. How's that?
We live in a world battling for peace, threatened with violence and inequality being justified as both means and ends, sometimes disguised, packaged, and branded differently. This self-destructive worldview is dominated and backed by spurious arguments for leadership based on the idea of supremacy of race, religion, or culture, or of money. Monica's Counter, a perspective drawn from contemporary idiom, is based on experience and conviction. It shows that leadership can be shaped with equality, freedom, justice, and where means and ends are rooted in the transformatory power of human compassion, described in her award-winning book, Radical Transformational Leadership. Let's explore this transformatory power of human compassion together. Join us for the program with Dream Vision 7 Radio Network twice a month on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern, and every Saturday at 6 a.m. Eastern. Share this information widely. Enroll people who want to make a difference. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network hosts many programs that unite humanity, sourcing our love. Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma, starting March 2019 in Oakland, California. It's open to all changemakers wanting to generate equitable and sustainable results for well-being. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. In this program, you'll discover pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in March 2019 in Oakland, California. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. We need new leadership capacities to face the challenges of today's world, to think differently, design strategically, and act on principles with accountability and generate results. These new capacities must be able to align principles, purpose, and practice to build a better world. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in March 2019 in Oakland, California. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership.
We are back again, Monica and Therese, on the radio show hosted by Deborah. So what we were talking about is really making a difference through fundraising. And what you heard is the approach that Therese takes. She knows very clearly that for her,
generosity, and equity matter. And it's from that springboard that she designs strategies and what needs to happen. But designing is just one part of it, Therese. What results are showing up in this new way of fundraising?
Well, feedback from the attendees at the donor events has been fantastic. Attendees have been deeply touched by the experience. And after the events, donors and clients become more invested. Even though it's just one event, it has a far greater reach than just raising money. Those who attended are transformed and empowered. Donors and clients are inspired to volunteer and take on leadership positions. And we raise more money.
Fantastic. So people always ask us, does the project have to be so big? Because the problems are so big. So my project needs to be very, very big. And they confuse that with the knowing that in today's world of connectivity, we have the opportunity to link what's happening locally, globally. So it's no longer how big is my project. The question really is my project a paradigm shifter? Is my project based on universal values? Does it shift a pattern? And as I act to solve any problem. Lovely. And go ahead. What are the other shifts or breakthroughs that's taken place because of your work, Therese?
Well, I also see bias and prejudice shift. Donors and clients speak to each other in a different way. Donors begin to stop blaming the clients for being without resources, to seeing themselves in the clients. Attendees went from sounding apathetic and voicing that the problems were unsolvable to becoming inspired to work on solving the problem.
You know, when you speak about this shift, I think it's very, very important to highlight it, Therese, because this shift in bias and prejudice that starts happening not because we are arguing about it, not because someone's telling us that we are biased or prejudiced. It's happening because I'm relating to another human being where I'm attuned to that person and I'm resonating with the deeper values each human being stands for. That's a huge space of possibility, and that's what you created. And the benefit of this approach is that when I resonate there, I will transform my prejudice and bias through this interaction, provided I name it and make the invisible visible. Can you give examples of this event that you spoke of, that you created a huge shift through a series of fundraising events? Could you tell us a little more?
Yes, I held the first event of this type in the backyard of a homeless shelter so that the parents living in the shelter house felt more comfortable attending. We served simple food. Prior to the event, we met with the women and had them access their inner potential. We had client speakers at the event, and we told them to speak about their values and what they cared about. And one father from our program spoke about how he cared about his kids as children and the problems he was having with them. And this created a space for everyone to open their hearts. Grace was present, and afterwards donors were talking to him about their problems with their kids as well. And it became just parents talking to parents. No donors, no men and women that were homeless, just people. So it was a great success. And then after that, the donors gave much more money and volunteers to be board members. And the next year, when we held the same event, I was deeply touched because when we asked for volunteers, many women who lived in the shelter signed up to volunteer, even though they often worked long hours at several jobs and had children, and they offered their time generously.
So inspiring, Therese. The first time you told me about this incident, it was like, for me, a huge shift
in just the way we relate to each other as human beings. So what I heard you say that inspired me then and still inspires me is that for both the donors as well as the people living in homeless shelters, the base that was created for interaction was far beyond who's giving and who's receiving. It was based on what they stand for. And then to be able to share as human beings one to another, the fact that they are both parents and the beauty in the human spirit, whether I'm a donor or I'm living in a homeless shelter, the beauty of the human spirit is this place sort of breaks the boundaries of power that's dominating power. It is based in a totally different space. So thank you for bringing in that and bringing in how we resonate with each other when we can work from that space. And to think that people offered each other their time and whatever resources they had, that is generosity. Do you have other results that you'd like to share, Therese?
Yes, as I mentioned, I've just recently introduced activities at these events so that donors and clients can identify the most pressing problems and identifying the root causes of the issue. So, and I'm excited to develop this more. A couple months ago, I tried this at a stakeholder meeting with donors and clients present, and the results was that we had several people with lived experience volunteer to sit on an advisory council and had interest being on the board, and donors also volunteered for these leadership positions.
Great! So for me, these results may sound like, well, it happens. No, they actually shift the patterns that keep us disenfranchised. And so the two things that I heard you say that are applicable everywhere, Therese, are the fact that there are templates and tools that can be used to co-create, genuinely co-create, spaces where everyone who is part of the stakeholder group, whether I'm giving money or I'm receiving it, are able to move ahead. And for me, this is a very vital component, and that we have ways we support, you know, strategies that are synergistic, provide information, we are able to support those who take risks. We also have ways in which donors are focusing on the outcomes, not just on activities. So that shift that you created, building the architecture of enduring change, not temporary change, was, I think, very, very important. Thank you, Therese. It seems like, you know, you've narrowed down what is crucial in making an event transformational, a donor event transformational. And if you would share that with us, I think it would really benefit us, because these are like, you know, whenever you design a donor event, what are the principles behind it?
Yeah, so I've identified 7 components. First of all, I must continue to practice my practice of RTL and use the Conscious Full Spectrum Response Framework to identify values, the norms and systems that need to shift, and to solve the problems I'm working on. Secondly, I hold the events where clients and donors feel more comfortable and make the food simple and delicious. Crucially, before the event, it's very crucial to have the clients access their own inner potential for empowerment and prep the client speakers to talk about their core values and what they care about. This is often the key to promoting conscious reciprocity. It is a space where donors' hearts break open and they see each other, clients and donors, as people.
Thank you. Yes, these three that you've listed so far, and I'll ask you to list the others, first, that this work is about my continued practice. It's about personal transformation in a dynamic way, leading to social transformation. I think the second thing that the principle is so important is that this is not about pandering to anybody. It's about the joy of simplicity and the ability to connect with each other. In leadership work, we call it attunement. So first, I practice. Second, I make this event meaningful, not glittering, not glitzy, meaningful. And the third principle I heard is that you encourage people to transform narratives based on core values. You know, somehow, Therese, we often stand for values, and then we know that we have a crisis of ethical leadership where our planet are being hurt, our planet is being hurt, and people are being hurt. And it's not by one person. It's leadership in the community. It's leadership, in fact, the political sphere, the leadership of academia. So for us, this is a very important thing, that we must change the narrative by speaking, and you encourage that. What else?
So at the event, I include three more things. I make sure I have everyone present to access their values. And as I said earlier, I have activities where everyone can identify the most pressing problems and identify the root cause and systems and norms that aren't working. And I make committed requests. I ask the donor and clients to volunteer. And I discuss leadership positions open for both clients and donors. And then if it's a fundraising event, I ask for donations. And then afterwards, I ask for feedback about the event from the attendees, so I can check to see if the activities were meaningful.
Fantastic, Therese. This, again, has a lot of application worldwide. When you use the word access their values, what you mean is get in touch and act from there. That's what you mean. Yeah. And for me, that's what I mean when I say that. That I am able to get in touch with my deepest self, and I'm able to access it in the event, what I do then, how of what I do before, and what I do after. Your fifth point is the fact that most of us, know when a problem shows up. For example, homelessness, we know there's a problem. Or quality education, when we know there's a problem, we want to respond to it. Of course we must. But the most pressing problems have a system or a norm that gives rise to that problem that we must alter. And therefore, that you bring in this dimension in the event at every stage of its delivery, its design, very important that we start thinking beyond just the immediate. And the system is immediate. And what I mean is immediate, superficial. There is something immediate and underlying. So I'm not talking of long-term. I'm talking about the difference between immediate superficial and immediate underlying. And you brought that. That was your fifth point, that they are looking at the root of these systems and norms that are not working and creating alternatives. The sixth point you made is that if it is about fundraising, which it is, there must be action. And that, Therese, too often we hesitate to ask, as if we are asking for ourselves, as if somebody says no, then we are not happy with that conclusion. So basically, what we are speaking of is six very important points. And the last one, that you track change. What we measure is what we move. And if we don't put in place tracking mechanisms that will transform, we will go back to our habitual patterns. So these seven principles, I practice, I have it where it's comfortable, I am able to talk about my values, and so are they. Four, we access our values for strategic action. Five, we look at the systemic issues and norms. Six, we are in action. And I ask, because an ask is the opening of the heart of generosity. And then I track change. Wonderful. So it's clear to me that you're not just a fundraiser. You have other significant contributions you've made as a radical transformational leader. And basically, I want to start speaking about these changes. So, fundraising, and what else?
Yes, so in my county, I use radical transformational leadership tools and templates in my day-to-day activities and homelessness and working with those with mental health conditions. So my county had used RTL tools and templates to create a master strategic plan on homelessness, but that plan did not account for the problems with community narratives that were detrimental in our progress to end homelessness. In my work, I was one of the leaders of a countywide communication plan used by organizations working on the issue that shifted harmful community narratives to a narrative of equity, compassion, and dignity for those who lack housing. And we determined that a communication plan was needed because a group of us trained in RTL working on homelessness first went through the RTL design process called the Transformational Results Chain. We also used another design template that allows a project to go to scale called the Synergistic Operational Strategies. One of the four components is to support risk takers. So issues of homelessness can be very contentious, and on several occasions, leaders in our group received a great deal of negative comments in the local paper for standing up for those who were homeless. And when this happened, we were ready and sent letters to the editor to back their projects. We also spoke up for each other at city council meetings. And the results have been in alignment with the organizations working on the issue and a renewed community resolve to solve the problems. The effort also helped us move towards combating NIMBYism, which is short for not in my backyard. And that's when neighbors block new housing. And NIMBYism is also a problem when we want to build mental health care facilities and supportive housing. Untreated mental illness is also a root cause of homelessness.
Thank you. And Therese, I know we will describe each of these again because it's a lot to take in, but I just want to draw a principle of architecture. You know, when you say design, today we are delivering what we've designed to deliver. The intention may have been different, but the manner in which we design will determine what we deliver. That's systems thinking 101. And, you know, you quoted Dr. Martin Luther King, and I'm quoting an architect, Buckminster Fuller, who said that the next revolution is not about a bloody revolution where nobody wins. It's about a design revolution where we can integrate architecture based on fairness and dignity for all. And I think that, how do I design this architecture? Because you did that. And what you're saying is that there are cognitively coherent templates that we learn to use, because complexity requires me to look at something with more than one lens. And so basically, I need to be able to see how I integrate all of this into my work. And how do I use multiple frameworks to be able to design to make a difference? And because they are cognitively coherent, it's actually so simple once we practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think we will take a break right now, and we will maybe talk about how the radical transformational leadership frame, the transformational results chain frame, supported us.
Are you satisfied with the world as it is today? If you're not satisfied, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma, starting March 2019 in Oakland, California. It's open to all changemakers wanting to generate equitable and sustainable results for well-being. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. Everyone has the potential to be a leader, a person who creates a new future through actions in society, at home, and at work. In this program, you'll discover pathways for unleashing our human potential to create new futures through strategic action. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in March 2019 in Oakland, California. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. We need new leadership capacities to face the challenges of today's world. To think differently, design strategically, and act on principles with accountability and generate results. These new capacities must be able to align principles, purpose, and practice to build a better world. Again, join us for a program to unleash your full potential with Dr. Monica Sharma in March 2019 in Oakland, California. Contact 415-808-4465. That's 415-808-4465. Go to risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership. That's risetogetherbayarea.org/leadership.
On Deborah's show, and this is Monica and Therese. And we left the space with knowing that you and I are architects of change. And I wanted you to describe, what are the shifts, Therese? Because narratives require us to shift a narrative. So what were the narratives you were shifting? And what did you shift?
Yes, so by using the TRC, we found that the negative community narratives were a key component in the rise of homelessness. So we identified these shifts. Number one, we wanted to shift NIMBYism from neighbors stopping housing units from going into their neighborhoods to allowing housing to be built in all their neighborhoods. And we wanted to shift the attitude that those who experience homelessness are undeserving, to everyone is worthy and has the right to be housed and healthy. And we wanted to shift apathy, an attitude that the problem is unsolvable, to that it is solvable, and that many communities around the country have ended homelessness.
Great. You know, when we work from our values, and the values you worked from were dignity for everybody, fairness, and a knowing of our generosity. And then you can shift the conversation, because we are then not attached to our point of view, and we are able to generate world views based on values. And to me, that is totally different from an opinion. And you transcended this place, not by telling people what it should be, but by people unfolding their own caring and generosity. And this whole attitude that we give with pity is so not supporting the self-esteem and dignity of people. And to me, to transform that space into, I am as human, I am one with that space, great. And that you were able to look at the shift from apathy to compassion. Wow, Therese, that is truly something. And what else changed, Therese?
So even though our organizations had different missions, some were day-to-day services or what shelters, veterans, outreach, we had different missions, but we all agreed on the outcomes we were all working towards and the greatest impact we desired and the shifts we needed. And so we became more aligned in our efforts.
Yeah, and when communities start planning and using plans that are based on values and shifts, guess what? The process is enduring. And to me, that's one of the biggest things. So what are some of the, let's say, learning you have for what you do differently?
Yeah, so I do differently. There's a fallacy that people do not want to talk about values. And the new learning I have is that I have brought values into transforming difficult conversations with all types of groups, individuals, including donors, those experiencing homelessness, law enforcement, conservative groups, judges, et cetera, farm workers, and teams.
Yes. Talking about values is what should become a way of our conversation. Great. And then?
Yeah. And then, another fallacy is one has to be trained in system design to identify a system that isn't working. And the new learning I have is, like, I have successfully asked people from all types of backgrounds to identify root causes and what systems aren't working. And I've learned that I can also be a system thinker and identify the root causes of problems.
Great. And anything else?
Yeah. And so there's, like, I have a couple more points that the fallacy that nonprofits and government agencies should solve the problems of our community. But the new learning is that clients, donors, volunteers, community members can also step into leadership and make the change using CFSR.
Yeah.
And also,
and other architectural tools. Correct. And
yeah, and we have to entertain donors to raise money. That's a fallacy. A new learning is that people seek a deeper meaning and want to access their core values. They want to create change beyond just donating and are able to work to shift the systems and norms that aren't working.
Right.
And it's a fallacy that it's impossible to shift class and racial bias and prejudice. And my new learning is when core values are accessed, bias and prejudice shift, and people yearn for connection from each other.
Fantastic. In summary, what would you like to share that would leave our listeners with the inspiration you are to me and to others?
Yeah, so I embody values rather than just talking about values. I've been practicing RTL for almost 6 years because I've been able to use the Conscious Full Spectrum Response Framework to source my real potential, which has given me a profound source of power to step into leadership roles with a value-based lens. And I stand for generosity, equity, and courage, and now those words have become part of my everyday, day-to-day life. And I've embodied those words so that if I'm not acting generously or with equity and courage, I recognize it almost immediately. And that's been especially true when interacting with my family.
Lovely.
Yeah, and so when values are sourced, I also learned that when values are sourced, the us versus them mentality fades and working with different people, I've been astounded and deeply touched by the transformation I go through and others go through when values are sourced. And I have witnessed and felt animosity towards individuals and groups fade in one or two meetings. And this has been instrumental in creating cooperation between agencies and those in power to work together, break silos, and groups who were stalled now step into action.
Yes, transcending polarities. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then?
Yes, and using the conscious full spectrum response framework has made my work more effective. In my work on homelessness and mental health issues, using a value-based lens to identify the root causes of suffering in systems and norms that aren't working has been a game changer for my effectiveness. And prior to working with RTL, I often felt despair that the issues in poverty and homelessness, and I felt ineffective.
Great. Thank you so much, Therese, for joining
us. Thank you.
And thank you to all our listeners.
Thank you.